Pradyumna. It's still early, just past 6 a.m. I've slept my typical 5 hours. As soon as my eyes flutter open, I shower and get dressed. Then I must immerse myself in some sort of activity. I know from experience that the only way to keep the feeling away is to keep moving. From my bedroom window, I watch Gerald pack his belongings into the back of a yellow taxi, his shoulders looking small inside his rumpled suit coat. He doesn't look at the manner at all as he gets into the back seat. I feel a pang of sadness as I watch him disappear. I'm about to turn away from the window when I see the black SUV pull into the drive. Betsy Martin toddles down the front steps in her signature high heels and gets into the back seat. A thrill shoots through my chest as it silently whisks her down the drive and out of sight. I finish getting dressed quickly and tiptoe into the hallway. With any luck, the others will stay in their rooms for at least another hour, giving us just the right amount of time. I creep down the hallway to Lottie's room. I can't risk waking the others by knocking, so I open her bedroom door just a crack and peer in. The shades are still drawn tight across the windows, and the room is dark.
Lottie,
I hiss. There's no answer, so I open the door a bit farther, slipping inside. As my eyes adjust to the dim light, I make out the form of tiny Lottie lying back on the pillow. Her frame is so small, it barely makes a dent in the blanket. She is motionless, lying on her back, peaceful. She looks. I lean over closer to her and look for the rise and fall of her chest, but see nothing. My heart palpitates.
Lottie!
I call out in my full voice this time.
Her eyes flip open and I stumble back, startled.
Who's there?
She says angrily, swinging her arms, pawing at the air in front of her as though trying to fight off an invisible attacker.
Lottie, it's me. Jesus, I thought you were dead. He almost gave me a heart attack.
I approach the bed again, tentatively, my hand clutching my chest.
Pradyumna? Why on earth would you think that?
She says irritably, glancing at the alarm clock by her bed.
And what are you doing here? It's 6:30 in the morning. Yes, I know. Get up.
I am already crossing the room, yanking open the curtain so that golden early morning light spills into the room. She blinks, struggles to push herself up against the mountain of pillows on her bed.
What is going on with you?
She watches me rush around the room, looking more amused now than annoyed. I pause at the foot of her bed, bouncing from foot to foot impatiently. I don't want to take the time to explain, so I lay it out for her as quickly as possible.
Listen. I saw Betsy leave in her car just now. I think this is our chance to go explore the East Wing and see if we can find anything else about Agnes. But we have to move fast.
I grab a bathrobe that's hanging off the side of her chair and throw it to her. She is fully awake now, sitting up in her striped pajamas, her feet on the floor.
Really? You're sure?
She takes the robe.
Positive. But I don't know how long she'll be gone, so we'd better hurry.
Lottie thinks for a moment. I can see the resolution settling on her face as she decides to follow me. She throws the covers back and slides her feet into a pair of slippers as I rush for the door.
Wait!
She calls out. I stop and turn back toward her, my hand resting on the doorknob.
Are you sure you want to go? This is my thing. My crazy journey. You could risk your place in Bake Week if we were to get caught.
I think of my place at Bake Week. Of the tent and the competition. How little it matters to me. How little anything matters lately. I shouldn't even be here. Winning would mean next to nothing to me. Would give me no prize I don't already have. I am the fraud here. Not because I'm no good, but because I don't care.
Yes, you old loon, now let's hurry.
You really are something speaking to your elders that way. Ageism is not attractive.
Lottie tuts as we creep out into the hallway and make a run for the landing. We cross slowly. One of the cleaning staff comes up the stairs carrying new bed linen, and we stop to casually look up at a painting of Richard Grafton. As soon as the woman has passed, we make a break for the East Wing.
The important thing is not to wake Archie,
Lottie whispers as we tiptoe up to the double doors. Through the glass, I see a long, empty hallway. I look to Lottie, who gives me a small nod, her eyes wide. I push down on the latch, and it clicks open. I wave Lottie in first, slipping after her into the East Wing and closing the door carefully behind me. The hallway is dimly lit by oil lamps retrofitted with Edison bulbs. They flicker in a convincingly old-fashioned way as we move down the hall, carpeted with a long Persian rug. My heart rate accelerates pleasantly, relishing the risk. I don't know what we are looking for exactly, or how we will know it when we see it, but the thrill of the hunt is more than enough for me. Lottie turns back to me and points to the far end of the hall. Wordlessly, we creep up to a set of double doors. We pass through a small sitting area and into a large open room furnished with an oversized wooden secretary and a wall of bookshelves. A large stone fireplace takes up most of another wall with two overstuffed chairs cozied up to it. We scan the walls, taking in the shelves, which are filled with an assortment of books and knickknacks, the kinds of things you'd find on the set of a BBC mini-drama. The leather-bound books, a brass-handled magnifying glass, a white marble bust of a man, Beethoven perhaps, his hair frozen in close-cropped curls around his head. I open one of the drawers in the secretary. It is filled with old-fashioned pens with metal tips and glass bottles of ink. The others contain similarly obscure bits and bobs, useless for our purposes but interesting nonetheless.
"Oh, I don't even know what I'm looking for," Lottie whispers, sighing with frustration and leaning against the arm of one of the chairs. "This is just a waste of time. I'm so sorry I dragged you into all this."
I ignore her. I've never been one to easily dole out pity, and I continue to poke around the room picking up objects on the shelves. There's a cigar box full of unsmoked Cuban cigars, petrified by age. What a waste. I spin a large marble globe on its axis, noting its borders were drawn from a time far before the sun set on the British Empire. A Victrola record player stands at attention in the corner.
"Maybe we should try her bedroom,"
I suggest, picking up a nondescript wooden box off the top of the mantel. Before I can open it, Lottie lets out a small cry and snatches it from my hands. She tilts the top of the box back on its hinges, revealing a thick pack of note cards. Lottie pulls a stack of them out, fanning them out across the top of the secretary.
"I'd forgotten all about these."
The recipes are written in tilted cursive on white note cards. There are recipes for bread, for elaborate cakes, for pies and cookies. They are worn with use, their edges bent, stained with drops of vanilla and smudged with cooking oil.
"They're my mother's," Lottie says. "I haven't seen them since she disappeared."
I pick one out and read it out loud. "Special day strawberry shortcake."
"Oh, that one was incredible."
Lottie smiles, remembering.
"It was like a traditional shortcake, but the biscuit had strawberries baked into it. She sprinkled homemade vanilla bean infused sugar on top."
Something begins to itch at the back of my mind as I sift through the recipes. They are all unique and lovingly constructed. There's one for a chocolate ganache tart striped with hazelnut and praline, a honey cake with orange marmalade filling, coconut cream filled donuts with meringues in the center. Extra notes have been added to the margins. Addendums to use more cherries or to keep it in the oven for 5 minutes longer. It's what every good baker does. Tries to make the recipes better over time. You can tell Lottie's mother was a fantastic baker. And I can see where Lottie gets it from.
"Look, this one is stuck."
I gently detach a card, which has been adhered to another with a bit of something sticky. "World's best blueberry buckle," I whistle.
"That's quite a claim."
Lottie takes the card from me.
"If anyone could make the world's best anything, it was my mother. She was the best baker I've ever met."
Lottie reads each of the recipes lovingly, stroking the handwriting as she reads through them.
"Some of these I've never even tasted. She didn't have the chance to bake for just the two of us very often, and I..."
Lottie stops. Outside, there's the faint sound of a car door closing. I tiptoe to the window and pull back the edge of the curtain. Below, the black SUV has returned. Betsy Martin has already gotten out. Her arms swing forcefully as she makes her way up the front steps.
"Shit, she's back!"
I hiss. We look at each other wide-eyed. Lottie drops the recipe box with a clatter and we both cringe. Her hands are shaking as we frantically gather the recipes from the secretary. I take a bunch of them from her and stuff them back into the box, closing its lid and tucking it under my arm as I look around the room to make sure nothing else is displaced.
"We have to hurry!"
Lottie says, her voice thick with fear. We bolt into the hallway. At the end of the hall, the doors are still shut tight. The lights from the landing illuminate their windows. I realize with alarm that there is no way to avoid Betsy if she takes the main staircase. Lottie grabs onto my arm and pulls me back.
We'll run into her if we leave through the landing,
Lottie whispers.
We have to hide and wait for her to pass.
I look wildly around the hallway at the row of closed doors. There is no way to tell what is behind any of them. Betsy's shadow is a smudge on the windows of the French doors, growing darker and crisper as she approaches. I make a split decision, opening a door to my left and pulling Lottie through it with me. I shut it very carefully behind us, my heart racing. The room is dark, the curtains drawn almost all the way across the window, letting in only a tiny shard of silvery light. My eyes finally adjust, and I realize we are in a bedroom. A large four-poster bed takes up the center of the room, and carved wooden poles rise in twisted spears on each corner like some sort of torture device from a medieval dungeon. Lottie sees the shape stirring under the blankets the same time as I do and lets out a gasp. It's Archie. Shit. Of all the doors to open, we had to choose that meathead's. And then I see something else. A slender ankle draped out over the side of the bed. It takes me a moment to process the nymphish outline of a young woman asleep next to him. A loud, snorting snore comes from the bed. I feel Lottie's hand gripping my forearm. I wonder how much she's seen. Out in the hallway, the distinctive click-clack of Betsy's footsteps grows closer, and then recedes down the far end of the hall. I turn my back to the bed, grasping for the handle to the door. I twist it open and release us back out into the hallway. My body buzzes with adrenaline as we run to the end of the hall and out onto the landing. I look down at the grandfather clock standing in the foyer. 7:25. Time to get ready for another day in the tent.